One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
In honor of Military Appreciation Month, Verizon thought of a lot of different ways we could show our appreciation, like rolling out the red carpet, giving you your own personal marching band, or throwing a bumping shindig. At Verizon, we're doing all that in the form of special military offers. That's why, this month only, we're giving military and veteran families a $200 Verizon gift card and a phone on us, with a select trade-in and a new line on select unlimited plans. Think of it as our way of flying a squadron of jets overhead while launching fireworks. Now that's what we call a celebration, because we're proud to serve you. Visit your local Verizon store to learn more. $200 Verizon gift card requires smartphone purchase, $799.99 or more with new line on eligible plan. Gift card sent within 8 weeks after receipt of claim. Phone offer requires $799.99 purchase with new smartphone line on Unlimited Ultimate or postpaid Unlimited Plus. Minimum plan $80 a month with autopay plus taxes and fees for 36 months. Less $800 trade-in or promo credit applied over 36 months. 0% APR. Trade-in must be from Apple, Google, or Samsung. Trade-in and additional terms apply.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
What's going on? Welcome to Knife Talk. This is a podcast for knife makers, knife enthusiasts, DIYers, and everybody else. I'm Jeff Fader from Fader Knives. With me is the great Mareko Momasi of Momasi Fire Arts, the great Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives, and I cannot believe we have such a great guest. Carly Jenkins is here. Carly is from Damasteel, and we are so thrilled that she's talking to us from beautiful Sweden. Carly Jenkins, how are you?
I'm good, Jeff. Thanks so much for the lovely intro. I can't believe, after listening to you guys for the last 3 years, I'm here, finally.
I think Craig, Mareko, we can all believe that Carly's here. Carly's fantastic.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Without a doubt. So you've been away, Carly. You've been away.
Yeah, I have. I've been in Austria over the weekend. I was there for the Austrian Knife Show. Martin Huber put on the most amazing show. Him and his team and this amazing group of volunteers. We were there from Friday till Tuesday, and the country was beautiful. The town was beautiful. It was a lot of schnitzel. But we got through it. We saw some really amazing knives. Yeah, it was a fantastic weekend.
Amazing.
Now it was put together by Martin Huber and I think knife Material AT and all those guys. Were there a lot of, how many knife makers do you think were there?
There were like 75 makers there.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, it was kind of a huge show, especially for the first time they've done this. And we at Damasteel, we were on board right away. We met Martin at Blade Show a couple of years ago, and we kind of just said to him, like, anything you're doing, we're definitely in. This sounds awesome. He's such an incredible maker, but also just an incredible person. So it was like all systems go. And they had 2,200 people, I think, over the 2 days.
Oh, wow.
Dang.
Which is, yeah, it was in this tiny, tiny town in Upper Austria, about 2 hours away from Vienna. So it was like a really impressive crowd. Yeah, they were excited.
Is this their first event, too?
Yeah. First
Wowzers.
Event. Yeah. And I saw he's already planning for next year. So I don't know if it's going to be the same weekend again. But yeah, and he had... in makers from as far away as Anchorage. He had Gabe Fletcher there, who won actually Best Chef Knife.
Wow.
With this piece he did with Joshua Prince. There was like a plug in it, a Damascus plug they made. It was so beautiful. It looked kind of like a cactus field with birds and a moon. It was amazing. Yeah. So, wow. So yeah, the show was amazing. It was awesome.
Very cool. Very cool. So, I mean, we start the show every week, explain what we've been up to for the week. So we'll quickly get to us because we're we're the boring old men here. Mareko, what's been going on?
Same old shit. Just
there we go. Jeff, what's going on?
Same old shit. Let's go.
Oh, really? That is the answer.
No. That really is the answer. The only thing new is I had another snake in my shop today.
I did see. And, wow, it looked like a big one too.
It was funny enough. Last year I had a snake, and I didn't know. I'm not a snake person, and I don't really like them. And I'm barely a human person, so I mean, I don't. So my friend last year, John Ledford, who's an old blacksmith friend of mine, he's a big animal rescue guy. He came over and took care of it, and I thought, well, I can't be calling my friend every time something like this happens, and I don't want to hurt this thing. Like I respect the fact that it needs to live and do its thing, and I don't want them in my shop because like there's like dust everywhere and G10 and steel dust, and I can't believe that would be good for a snake. Yeah. So no. I got this gripper. It's almost like one of those things you grab things off the ground with. It's for snakes, but it's like, you know, it's meant to be a humane way to grab a snake. So my kid happened to be driving. She's home for the summer. She had to borrow the car, so she drove me to the shop. I opened the door and there's this giant snake in the car. And so she started filming, and it was hilarious because I'm trying to grab the snake. I can't put my coffee down, my bag down, and she's cursing up a storm. And we put the bleeps in it, and it was really funny. So, but I'm amazed.
Do you know what the problem is? I watched the video, and you literally picked up the snake, walked about 3 foot. Then put the snake back down. It's gonna be back tomorrow.
I'll do it again. I mean, I here's the thing. Here's the thing. I don't want to hurt this thing. And frankly, people are crazy. The people who are watching it, I should have killed it. But some people want me to eat it, and then other people are saying I'm being too rough with it. It was just like nobody was like, yo, you don't understand. You should. It was like this amalgamation of what humanity wants, and it was relatively. It went from incredible cruelty to incredible sympathy. And I just, you know, like I said, I didn't want. I saw it like rolling in my mind. It's rolling around in G10 dust, and I'm just like, I don't need that.
I think
you
got
rid of
it,
and you know, my daughter had a fun time, you know, narrating from inside of a car.
You got to figure out how they're even getting in.
I know how they're getting in. There's like my roll doors.
So you're just letting them in.
No. There's a roll door goes down and it doesn't, you know, clamp down and he squeezes in. I mean,
that is like my absolute worst nightmare.
I think that this one was the one from last year, and it just ate some chipmunks and all sorts of stuff around here, and it got. I mean, it was twice as. If you look at the old videos, it was twice as big as the one from last year. This thing was like probably, I mean, it was heavy too. And I know I should pick it up from the middle of the body because I picked it up from the head, and it was so heavy that it just squeezed out. So I picked it up, and it was like 5.5 feet long. It was huge. Whoa. But they're not poisonous. I'm not worried. But at the same time, I don't want to touch it. You know, it's like I'm from Lexington Avenue. The fuck do I know about this? Yeah. You know, I don't.
What type of snake was it? You know.
Oh boy, the snake experts came out and they were giving me the whole story. It was probably like a rat snake or a corn snake, whatever. These, who cares, frankly? Yeah. But it was funny because my daughter thought it was hilarious, and she was freaked. She thought I was gonna. She was terrified that I was gonna jokingly bring the snake up to the window of the car, and she was convinced that I was gonna accidentally drop it in the car, and she was just gonna like spontaneously combust. And I just said to her, "I'm like, I would never do that to you." So she's actually gonna come on to the Full Blast podcast, and we're gonna do the Zapruder film, analyzing, because she's like likes all these weird little funny moments in it. So it's you know, so otherwise we're working, you know, but still, it's snake season.
My toes are clenched. Had to bring them off the floor.
It was bad. I mean, it was big. It was really big. It was heavy, too. That was the shocking thing, is how heavy it was. So.
Oof.
But it's going to be back. I'm telling you, it's going
to
be back.
So what do you want to do? You put it in the priority box and put it in the mail? I mean, I want to get a...
Send it to Greg.
That happened. Thank you. Actually, that is a weird news story that I went over with Ben Snurry years ago, is that somebody tried to kill someone by putting a rattlesnake in a priority box, and sending it to their enemy. And they opened it up, and this fucking snake just pops out. This pissed off snake is tired from being in travel for 3 days.
Yeah. Wow. So. Wow. So it'd be fine. It wouldn't get to me here. It'd be fine. But I would get a bill. I'd get a carrier bill.
I was going to say, I'm going to pay customs. You're like, oh, God, Jeff sent me this box. And now I'm going to pay customs for it. And then this snake pops out. New York snake pops out. What typical. The fuck? What are you? I'm working here. Wait, hey, what the fuck? Where's Craig?
Right, shall we do some questions?
Sure.
Shall we? Okay. We are Knife Talk Podcast on... Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. If you've got any questions for us, DM them. And you can actually do audio messages now too. So, yeah, send some audio questions to us. They're always good fun. I'll take the first one from Yako from JVB Knives. It's a question from Carly.
Oh, hey.
And Yako says, who designs the next patterns for Dharma Steel?
Interestingly enough, we had a meeting about next year's pattern just yesterday. So we do it as a team. We've got R&D there and Perry Rebellious and a couple of us from marketing and sales. And yeah, it's a small team. So we just all get in there and ponder away. So I'm excited about next year already.
Oh, cool. We should start with you telling us what Dharma Steel is. For those who haven't listened to the show maybe before in the past, we've worked with Dharma Steel for a number of years now. But maybe, Carly, you're probably better placed to tell everybody what Dharma Steel is.
Yeah, so we're a Swedish-based company. We've been around for 30 years now, and we do powder Damascus patterned steel. So it looks like a classic Damascus, but it's all made with powder. So it operates as a mono steel, which gives you these really amazing patterns, super cool, intricate designs. You know, we're doing custom patterns these days. We can really make anything.
Oh, wow.
And and we also do a plain RWL 34, which polishes up so beautifully. We saw a lot of that on the weekend. It's very, very big in Europe. And we're a team of 15. So like half of us are in the office and half of us are in production. And we're based in Söderfors, which is like an hour and a half north of Stockholm. And that's us.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay,
No,
go on. You go for it.
I was going to say, yeah, I guess I should also say, like, I do the marketing there. So that's my job. So no technical questions, please.
we'll
try.
So how was it start? Who started Dharma Steel and how was it? What was the evolution of the company?
There was a guy, Pelle, who used to work for Aerosteel, which is just around the corner. From where Dharma Steel is now. And he was working on powder technology. And he started working with a knife maker to make a better, cleaner steel for knife makers. And the two of them developed this patterned powder steel. The full history is on the website, but that's kind of the nuts and bolts of it. And then the Per and Christina, who own the company now, they took over in 2012. So they've been around for a while now. And so it's a family business. Yeah. Oh,
wow. Is knife making the biggest sort of industry for using Dharma Steel? Because I know like jewelers use it, that kind of thing as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Knife making is our biggest industry. Also do barrel steel for like really high end shotguns and things like that. But yeah, knife making is the biggest. Scissors, a lot of scissors. Yeah. Fidget spinners, those are big right now.
Dharma Steel fidget spinners.
Yeah, yeah. Wowzers. If you want to get really fancy.
Okay. We have an audio question, I think, Jeff, don't we?
Yes, we do. This audio question comes from Brigham Kindell. And Brigham says...
This one's for Carly. What is the most common misconception about Dharma Steel that you hear? Like things that people just don't understand about Dharma Steel?
Oh, bingo. That is great. Fingo's amazing. We're Blade Show buddies. And I think the most common misconception is that you just kind of like buy it as it is. So they see a knife and they think there's no work required. You just order a piece of steel and it comes. You don't need to heat treat it. You don't need to etch it. It's really more like a blank that's been pre-done for you. We get a lot of questions from people who just do not understand the whole process behind it at all. So yeah, I get a lot of those in the DMs.
I would imagine this is something I think with a lot of exotic steels, I think people get intimidated by how you go about, you know, working with the steel. Do you find that's getting less and less, or?
Yeah, people are getting braver. On the weekend in Austria, we had so many questions about forging with this stuff. And that was really exciting for me because I like when people do kind of take their own style. So like a brute to forge style and then do an Indama steel. I think that looks amazing. You know, like we've got this campaign going right now, like make it your own. We saw that with Ben Camone last year at the Dama Steel Chef Invitational. And he kept his style, but he integrated Dama Steel into it. So that was really beautiful. Beautiful stuff.
Yeah.
Nice. I'm intrigued what you said about custom patterns. So are people literally drawing patterns and you're recreating that?
Not quite, but we're able to take inspiration from you or ideas and then form them into patterns or shapes that you might be interested in. We can't repeat something exactly every time, but we can get pretty close. So we would never mess with like a logo or anything, but around that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Getting back to what you were talking about, Mareko, how would you go about forging Dama Steel?
Very carefully. I'm actually, so last year in June, I was in Ireland with a bunch of Irish makers, and actually Tobias Hengler was there and Oscar came and the boys from Blenheim Forge. It was a really cool get together with Fingal, and he got a crew of Irish makers together too. And but you gotta forge it very carefully. It is forgeable, but with that chromium content, it's tricky because you have to stay within a very specific temperature range. The thermal conductivity of the material is much slower than a conventional carbon steel. So you got to give it time for that heat to transfer through the material before you even start forging it. And then there's extra processes afterward to kind of prepare it for final heat treat and hardening that you got to be mindful of as well. But when it comes to working it with it, bigger machines are kind of better because of how stiff, like hot short, the material is. So it looks like it's plenty hot, but holy shit, it feels like a rock under a machine that's maybe doesn't have the right amount of power to really move that material. And if you watch any of the Dama Steel videos of them forging, they're forging under giant power hammers, which makes it really is suitable for that material. The tougher, the harder the material is to forge, the bigger machines you need. Go ahead, Carly.
Yeah, it moves really slow. And that is what I try to repeat to people. You just got to be so patient. If that color starts to change, just take a beat.
Yeah.
You know, and put it back in and wait for it to get hot again. Because there's no point trying to move that material if it is not at the right temperature.
It's going to be bad for the material, bad for the machines.
Yeah.
Carly,
exactly.
You know this because you're a knife maker too. I've seen the knives that you've made. Why are you laughing? I saw a knife you made.
Yeah, last year I went down to Örebro in Sweden and worked with Fredrik Spore. And he and I and a colleague of mine, we forged out a Gyuto, like a kind of a brute to forge style. And it was awesome. It was just the most fun weekend. And he just had a little power hammer at the time. He's since upgraded and he said he's moving material much better now. But it was a patient process. But having only forged with Dama Steel, I've never actually forged with carbon. To me, it didn't feel like you had to be so patient. But I do understand that if you're used to forging a carbon and then you go to like a stainless, it's going to be a slower process. So, yeah. And more steps. So,
yeah. When you're forging, when you go from forging some stainless like Domasteel and then go back to forging carbon feels like you're forging butter. It's like a stick of cream cheese to forge out a blade. It's so much softer. It's wild.
Carly, how did you get to Sweden? I mean, because you're from Canada, right?
Yeah, I'm from near Toronto, and there you can hear it, Toronto. And my husband is Swedish, so we met 15 years ago, and once we had our daughter, we moved to Sweden. It's nice to be close to grandparents. And yeah, it's a really good country to live in, actually. So Domasteel was just a very random choice for me. They were looking for someone who was a native English speaker. I'd never heard of custom knives before. I'd never heard of Damascus steel before. And they still said, that's okay. We can teach you. So yeah, here I am 3 years later.
And you speak Swedish too?
Ja, jag pratar lite, men pratar du svenska.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay.
Skål, ta mig fan. I got you. I got a little bit. I love P.S. Udebru is a fun little town.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah, you were there, right? In Udebru?
Yeah, I was there with the Tormek guys. We were talking basketball. One of the guys that I don't think the listeners know this, but Carly is a big NBA fan, giant Raptors fan. And she and I have been chatting about basketball for a while. And I actually ended up becoming good friends with a guy who is another basketball fan, Timberwolves fan, from Minnesota. And we were having a long conversation about basketball in Udebru.
Oh, cool. So, yeah, I grew up in a basketball family. My brother used to play with Jamal Murray. So I'm not a Nuggets fan, but I will cheer for any Canadians in the NBA. And then all this stuff with the Knicks is so fun, and the Pacers doing well is...
Listen, I don't want anyone to think anything other than Carly is an incredibly knowledgeable basketball fan. I remember when the Knicks – no, this is only going to be for me and Carly, but when the Knicks just made a big trade 2 years ago and the Toronto Raptors got two of the Knicks, and then we got OG Anunoby. You sent me this huge, long story about how great OG is and this – she's a real, real basketball fan, so which I appreciate. And we'll stop talking basketball because the guys, their eyes are glazing over. I can hear it.
Sorry about that.
Again.
The best part about last week was when we were talking about basketball for 5 minutes, and Mareko mentioned the Nuggets, and Craig goes, that's not the name of a team. There's no way that's the name of a team.
Is it really, though? Nuggets.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Not like chicken nuggets, like golden nuggets.
Like gold nuggets. Yeah, the Denver. It's like the gold nuggets.
Nuggets. Jeez. Well, I need to tell everybody about Even Heat whilst we're here.
Knife Talk is sponsored by Even Heat, the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com.
Go do it. What we got, Jeff? We've got questions. What else?
We have more questions for Carly. I think we should get to. We also have some listener feedback, and you know, we got more other questions and whatever we want to. At the end of this, I need the NBA prediction, finals prediction from Carly. But I'll let you answer that at the end.
Okay. Okay, yeah. I'll be ready.
All right.
Nuggets 1. Eagles 0.
Oh, God.
Is that how it works?
Outrageous.
Perfectly. Outrageous. That's exactly how it works.
Yeah, that's exactly how it works.
Okay, we've got another audio clip from Bingo again.
Yeah,
he's using up all his credits.
That's why he's a GSL. Here's Brigham Kindell.
Carly, what is your favorite Damasteel pattern?
See, I told you softballs.
He just wants to hear his own voice. I mean, that kind of question. I mean,
GSLs, that's why they send
What's your favorite color?
No, he's just so excited for Blade, and I totally understand. I'm also very excited for Blade when you get to see all your buds again. My favorite pattern is I really love Vinland. It's like a random pattern. I always say this is I'm being a Domestil dork, but I say Vinland is like the little black dress of patterns, and yeah, it's kind of underrated. It's yeah, that's my favorite.
Our listeners don't understand that comment.
Oh yeah,
no.
To the three other women who are listening.
It's the dual pattern. Okay, we get it, I think.
Yeah.
So do you ever, like, when you come up with new patterns, I don't know how it works, but do you ever dump old patterns, or something gets, you know, shelved, or do you just kind of grow the different patterns, or how does it work?
Yeah, we just keep growing our library. So every year I just have to keep inventing new ways to put more patterns on the same piece of brochure paper. So they keep getting smaller and smaller. But this year we'll be adding one. And we haven't gotten rid of anything in a long time. I think the last one we got rid of was more of a process thing than anyway. We were just having issues with it. So we said we will just retire this one and move on. So the library keeps getting bigger. I think we're up to about 37 patterns now, including our Domacore stuff. So
the snake is back, by the way.
Oh no!
Really?
I'm gonna send. Oh,
you just watch it come in.
No.
No, he's trying to get up into the rafters.
Oh my god!
I'm gonna let him go. I'm not gonna tell David. I'm just gonna let him do his thing.
Oh my god!
So you trapped in the car now? Like,
nah, this fucking guy doesn't want any. Craig, you were 100% right. I'm gonna take a picture and send this. There he is. I thought it was the fake.
Is it like Jurassic Park? You're in the car and your coffee had a little drip in it. You hear the boom,
no, I was
boom,
looking around.
Boom.
Yeah, this is fucking him. This is fucking him. I'm sending it to you guys right now.
I think at this point you got to name him.
I just don't want a fucking deal, frankly. But I'm afraid of telling.
You might have a question for Carly. You don't know.
Yeah. He's a big fan.
Keep going, guys.
You take you. What you do? You taking a picture?
A picture. I sent it to you. But the problem
a selfie with him.
See, here's the problem. We're recording. I obviously am not gonna, unless you want me to leave. I'm not gonna get him. He's up in the fucking rafters, and if I tell David, he's having a fucking heart attack, and then it's gonna sound weird.
Oh man, I could. Yeah, you just sent a picture. Oh yeah. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, he's going
that up. Looks. It looks. It's all. It looks. It looks dangerous because it's all black.
Yeah, it's fucking.
Okay. Well, this makes for a great podcast. Yeah. Just trying to describe a photo. Yeah.
What the hell is that?
Jeez, that looks huge.
I'll see you in a second.
So this is honestly my biggest nightmare. I saw this right before I logged on with you guys, and I thought, oh no, now we're gonna talk about the snake. That is my worst.
I gotta get him.
Nightmare.
I'm gonna be right back.
Yeah. You know, my wife is exactly the same. Just the thought of talking about a snake is enough for her to run to the hills.
Yeah. Really? I could have like a spider on my face, no problem. But snakes, oof.
Yeah.
That's not my game. Mm-mm.
Not the greatest. No.
I'll pass on the spider too.
Yeah, mice and rats are my thing. But oof, anyway, we've got more questions for Carly. Paul Jansen, another Gold Star listener.
Love, Paul.
A Carly question. Does Darmasteel benefit from a coffee etch or just the muriatic acid?
Oh, this might be more of a Mareko question, but I say, you know, stick to the recipe if you know it works. But anything acidic, I think essentially it'll give you some kind of etch. Mm. Depends on what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Mareko, what's your experience?
In my experience, the Domestil does a really great job of being corrosion resistant to coffee. it didn't do a fucking thing. And so, yeah, I think muriatic is the way to go. And I think part of that is because of, again, going back to the chromium content, which is what makes the steel stain less than carbon steel and stain resistant. You got to have something that can get through the oxide layers, because stainless does have an oxide layer. It's just clear. It does develop a patina like carbon steel, but you can't see it, which is what makes it shine up and stay nice and bright and shiny so nicely. So yeah, you need something stronger like a muriatic or the Gator Etch. Something I have done in the past is I'll start in muriatic and then all go straight into like a ferric chloride or something like that.
Yeah.
Before that oxide layer has an opportunity to reform, because it forms almost instantly once it's out of the acid, and it will become corrosion resistant pretty quickly again. So you have to, and I literally have like the tanks right next to each other, so I'll pull the knife right out of the muriatic and straight into the ferric right away. You need something strong.
Yeah, I was going to say also the current Gator Etch, I know there's kind of like very varying results at the moment with stainless, but I do know that they're coming out with a stainless version soon.
They have
have it out.
Yeah, it's called Gator Piss Max.
Gator Piss Max,
It's specifically for stainless.
Yeah, so try that out. I've just heard some different views. Like, the other one's not really for stainless. So
no, but the new one is. The new one is.
Yeah.
The new one is. So they, we're not, obviously, but yeah.
I have had good experience with Gator Etch cold. It takes longer. But I'm talking like refrigerator cold. And I discovered that accidentally because I had a stainless blade I was working on. Last November, December, and it was cold in the shop. And so my etch, therefore, was also cold. And I actually kind of forgot about the knife and the etch for a couple hours. And I was freaking out when I went to grab it. Because it was so cold, the etch was not as active, but the blade came out high contrast. And I was like, whoa, what the hell? I kind of experimented with it, and I got the same results. And so when I finished that blade, I was in Hawaii at the time when I finished that blade, visiting my buddy Neil Kamimura, and I put the Gator Etch in the refrigerator, gave it time to cool down, and then etched the blade in it, and a couple hours later, it came out beautiful, stunning high contrast. It needed very little brightening on the 15 and 20, just like a jewelry polishing cloth brightened the 15 and 20 right up. And the dark stayed nice and dark. And
oh, wow. It was great. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty good. And I didn't have to go through kind of like a lot of the extra steps of the high polishing and stuff that that the Baker Forge guys kind of describe in the etching process. It just did a simple hand sanded finish to like a satin 800, and it came out gorgeous.
Yeah. No, we're doing cold coffee etches next. Jeez.
No, cold coffee etch is a thing.
Yeah. Jeff, what's the update?
I mean, he got himself up in the the hood where we are, and I'm going to let him go. I'm not going to.
What the fuck? Is that you, Craig, or is that you got a sound thing going?
I've got a sound thing going.
I mean, I don't really. I mean, he's doing his thing. Dave is a little freaked out, but well, I told him he saw me. I tried to grab it, and then. He was going up to his spot, so I'm gonna let him. I'll probably try to get him out tomorrow or something. I'm not too worried.
Oh, jeez,
he's big. Jeez. Right, it was big, right?
You're gonna call your friend, aren't you?
When you said it was 5.5 feet, I was like, "There's no way." It looks like it probably is 5.5 feet.
I was lying against the wall. We measured the wall, and the wall's like almost 6 feet long. I mean, it's big. God. Yeah, it's not. Jeez. This wasn't like a garter snake, and then. And then all the people, you know what? I will call my friend because he was bummed out that he didn't come. I'll call him up and say, I know where the snake is. Come tomorrow. I'll have him by. But you know, people are like, oh, just pick it up. You saw that fucking thing. Would you go pick
it
up?
No way. No way.
Yeah,
no
even way. Though we're not like, I mean, you know, oh, it can't hurt you. It was big, right?
It looks 2 inches thick. Hey. No way in the world.
Oh, baby. Hey, I just looked up. So in New York, there is a large black snake species that is called the black rat snake that can get up to 6 to 8 feet long.
This is pretty close. I mean, this is like, I didn't want to be exaggerate. Like, I like to exaggerate normally, but I was like, because then all of a sudden it's like, oh, it was just a little garter snake. It's a fucking big snake. I said to my kid, she's like, she's freaking out. She's like, it's so big. And I said, I know. I said, when was the last? She's like, I don't know the last time I ever saw a snake like that. I said, well, where do you think it was? She goes, I think it was the zoo. Then she goes, I think it was in the zoo. So, yeah, it was large.
It was in the Jungle Book.
Yeah, right.
So we've mentioned etching Dharma Steel, and Mareko just alluded to the fact that it'll need a finish then to brighten up afterwards after an etch. What's your general sort of practice for that then, Morocco? What would you normally do?
Sorry, what part of it? At the end or
after the ets? You said yeah, you want to sort of polish up that 15N20.
Yeah, I just do it by hand with a jewelry polishing cloth. At least in the States, a common one that's easy to find is the Sunshine polishing cloths. And I think they have a few different colors, which represent different grits or, I guess, abrasiveness. And I usually get the yellow Sunshine polishing cloth, which I think is around 4,000 to 6,000 grit, roughly. Just by hand, nothing crazy, just by hand, just gently polish the blade. And it brightened up all the 15 and 20, really, or sorry, not the 15 and 20, but the silver portions of the pattern really nice.
Sorry, yes. Yeah.
And yeah, that was it. It took like 2 minutes. It was nothing. It was awesome.
Whoa.
Okay. That's cool. Yeah. Okay. I tell everybody about Indasa Rhino Wet. They may have a sort of a 2,000, 3,000 grit as well. I don't know. But they certainly have a big variety of grits available. So if you're doing any sort of hand sanding, Indasa Rhino Wet is the stuff you want to use because it just makes things easier and faster. And if it's easier and faster, you're saving money. And also, if you go to TexasFireSupply.com, we can save you money on your Indasa Rhino Wet by using Knife Talk 10 at checkout and getting 10% off your Rhino Wet and anything else that they sell there at TexasFireSupply.com. So go take a look. Right then, where are we, Jeff?
We have a question from our friend EDC Gearhouse.
Nice.
Ben from EDC Gearhouse says, Carly, will Damasteel ever venture into Tamascus or similar folder titanium since the process is similar?
Hmm.
I don't know. I do not think so. But that's a good question. You know, these exotic steels or whatever, I'm of the opinion. The more the merrier, and I really liked seeing them hitting the market. All of the things that those guys at Baker Forge are doing and what Tobias Hengler is doing in Austria, it's really exciting, and the market's evolving really fast, but I think we're just going to stick to our powder stainless, and we've got a pretty good setup in Sutter Forge, so it's working well for us.
So what would be the, you know, when you're talking to the guys in the shop, what is their normal, how do you schedule them out? Like, I mean, there's so much to do. How do they start what would it be a typical week in the shop?
Yeah, so we have two guys who really own the forge. So they're in the forge most of the time. And then they're cutting material in the warehouse and then coming into the forge. And then they're sending it immediately. The next room over is onto the CNC milling because we mill each piece. And then they're straightening it, checking for quality. And then we're packing it up. So I think at some point I've done a tour, but it's a really smooth operation. That we've got. It's like a horseshoe-shaped building, and things kind of go in one end of the horseshoe. They go through four or five hands, and they get packed up, and things can go out. Like, if we have no lineup of material, things could go out in just a day, even half a day sometimes. We can get stuff out, but our normal wait time is around 2 to 3 weeks.
No, but, like, from the material making. Like when the guys are making, you're saying that the stuff that they make in the morning can go in the mail that day?
Yeah. Yeah.
Whoa.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there's no like annealing or any of that stuff or?
No.
Huh. Cause like, I was surprised.
It's like annealed before we forge it.
Huh. But I just wonder, cause it's like, you know, I know all that steel is all air cooled to a certain degree. And it's relatively easy to cut with your saw. So I would just imagine that it would be, you know, you guys have done some sort of annealing before it shipped out.
We also do like a little bit of an etch on it before we, just so we know we're making sure the customer gets the right pattern. But no, very little.
Mm. Yeah.
Very fast process.
Are you set up for a certain pattern so you do a run of that? Or can you just mix and match as sort of orders demand?
No, they can do mix and match as things demand. So they'll get a order form in and it'll say, you know, we're going to send two or three bars to Marecco in Bjorkman's Twist, and they'll run that. And then it'll be, you know, two bars of agar for Jeff at a certain dimension, and they'll run that. So everything wow. people order is forged to order.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. That is cool.
Yeah. So we don't keep anything in stock. Except for the RWL sheets, obviously.
Right. Wow,
that's
cool.
Surprising.
Yeah, it's a bit of a crazy process, and that's why we really depend on our distributors like Maritime and Yance and American Metal and True Grit over in the U.S. and Canada. They're so important for our process because. Everything is forged to order, and if people need something within a few hours or a few days and they're over in North America, or if they're in Australia, they use Gamaco and they need it right away. So it has to go through our process. We can't just grab something off the shelf for people.
Oh, so these companies, they don't pre-order stuff from you. So if you order something from these companies, the order is going to go to you and then you ship it, or?
No. So they order, you know, stuff that's popular or they order things they've seen that leave their shelf pretty quickly. So usually our distributors have a bit of a stock, but we don't keep any stock.
Wow. What's the craziest thing you've seen someone make?
In honor of Military Appreciation Month, Verizon thought of a lot of different ways we could show our appreciation, like rolling out the red carpet, giving you your own personal marching band, or throwing a bumping shindig. At Verizon, we're doing all that in the form of special military offers. That's why, this month only, we're giving military and veteran families a $200 Verizon gift card and a phone on us with a select trade-in and a new line on select unlimited plans. Think of it as our way of flying a squadron of jets overhead while launching fireworks. Now that's what we call a celebration, because we're proud to serve you. Visit your local Verizon store to learn more. $200 Verizon gift card requires smartphone purchase, $799.99 or more with new line on eligible plan. Gift card sent within 8 weeks after receipt of claim. Phone offer requires $799.99 purchase with new smartphone line on unlimited ultimate or postpaid unlimited plus. Minimum plan $80 a month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months. Less $800 trade-in or promo credit applied over 36 months. 0% APR. Trade-in must be from Apple, Google, or Samsung. Trade-in and additional terms apply.
Spreadsheets, clunky software, 100 different logins just to run your business? There's a better way. Odoo. One simple, connected platform that handles sales, inventory, accounting, and more. So you can focus on growing, not juggling. Make the switch today at odoo.com. That's O-D-O-O.com.
With Damasteel.
Oh, I recently saw somebody make a button for a camera, like a clicker. Camera.
That's pretty cool.
Out of Blue Tongue. It was awesome. I thought that's so cool. And then is his name Jesse James? He made a cleaver that you could kind of hold like a suitcase. It had like a handle on it. And it was massive. I'd never seen a piece of steel that big. And especially to see it in Damasteel was crazy. It must have been, I don't know how much it weighed, a couple kilos, but the thing was huge. I think that's kind of cool. You see tiny, tiny little pieces or giant, massive. Yeah. And then
Go on.
No, I was gonna ask you guys about your build along thoughts, what you guys were thinking of making this year for the build along with the RWL and the Heim Skringla.
I'll be honest, I'm struggling with the extra bit.
The extra bit.
I've got a couple of ideas, which I don't really want to share yet, because I know exactly what Jeff is like. Jeff will be all over it. All over it.
What do you mean?
You're a thief. No, I'm just joking. I'm joking.
Marek, have you got any thoughts what you're doing yet?
I'm not quite sure either.
I think it's easier for you because you know using bolsters and all that kind of thing,
right?
To use extra pieces,
but it doesn't have to be attached. It can be off to the side. So I'm thinking of joining the build along this year, and I've got some ideas.
Okay.
Yeah, I will tell you because I'm not into gatekeeping. So I was thinking of making like a bottle opener.
Oh,
on
shit.
The side.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's like, so I'm going to do a knife and then a little bottle opener. And I was.
And the bottle opener too.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I think it's big enough. I think you get enough material. So do something like
I'm
that.
I'm thinking maybe an accessory, as in milling out the back and putting magnets in and, you know, as a sort of knife rack.
Ooh. Kind of thing. Okay. Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah. I like that.
I can't remember the dimensions of the materials. What is it again that people are going to be working with?
It's like 2 by 2 inch of Heimskringla, and then they're getting like a foot of the RWL. And I can't remember the thickness. I don't have it in front of me. Maritime's got it all at the moment.
I think now's a good time to tell everybody about the build-along, actually, because... if you haven't heard the show before, we do this every year. We've done it for, this is the fourth year?
Yeah.
Possibly the fourth,
yeah,
fifth?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Where as part of Dharmasteel's Chef Invitational, which they do every year, we have a build-along. So our listeners can all build the same thing. Well, not the same thing, but under the same sort of dimensions, the same material. And it's always interesting to see what people make with these things. And they will be very harshly judged by us and a bunch of other people. not harshly at all. But there will be prizes and all that kind of thing. But it's always good fun to see people doing it. And people can use the, is it Dharmasteel DCI hashtag, build along?
Yeah, it's hashtag? Just Dharmasteel build along hashtag you can use.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've seen one already come through. So
oh,
I
really?
Think Gold Star listener Paul Jansen started his build already. So
teacher's pet.
I think it's good. It's like inspiring. I really like when people share their work and share their process. It's very cool.
Nice.
Have you got any ideas, Jeff? What are you going to be doing?
You know what? After I won the best serrated
knife,
I felt
you really?
I felt like
did
I,
you really?
I felt like I should. I felt like I shouldn't be involved with this. So I'm going to be. I'm going to just enjoy what everybody else is doing and be supportive.
Really?
Yeah.
You're not going to be the reigning champion. You think you may have pushed your luck last time?
You know what? I'm supportive of other people. I'm dealing with you guys, and I'm dealing with a snake guys on the way. So all the playing around is a whole different story. But I'm very supportive and looking forward to what everybody's doing.
Yeah, yeah. And anybody who wants to get involved, if you head over to maritimeknifesupply.com, you can buy the material there. And, you know, Lawrence is a good dude. He's got everything else you possibly need as well. Belts, handles, materials, forges, kilns, and more. So head on over to maritimeknifesupply.com or Maritime Knife Supply on Instagram. But yeah, the more that join in, the better. And we always have a good time when we do the show as well. Yeah, it's always good. So get involved if you can. Please do. Okay. A question from Jordan. Fellas and Carly. When heat treating, is it better to let your kiln heat up with the knives in it or wait until the kiln reaches the desired critical temperature and then put them in? Seems like some folks are against option one because they think the blades may overheat. They're not going to overheat because they're getting to that temperature. So they're never going to overheat doing it that way. Personally, I always put them in at the beginning. Because it just adds to the sort of soak time, I suppose. Mareko, have you got a strategy for that?
I think it depends on the steel you're working with. I mentioned before, stainless especially has a much slower thermal conductivity than carbon steel. And so I think actually, and I think some struggle with some of that thermal shock of getting to too hot of a temperature and not in as even of a way. By just going in hot or after the kiln is completely heated up. So I do think that slower, bringing it up to temperature with the kiln benefits stainless probably more than carbon steel, where carbon steel, you can just slap it in. With carbon steel, I would probably, avoid putting it in with the cold kiln and letting it come up to temperature, because depending on the kiln you have, it could take a while to get up to that temperature. And once you get above like 1250 or yeah, once the steel becomes incandescent, starts to emanate light, essentially, you're going to start developing forge scale, and if it's exposed to the open air, you're potentially losing carbon unnecessarily. There's kind of an element of diminishing returns in regards to the temperature. So as the kiln heats up, the first few hundred degrees happen super fast. But as you get closer and closer to your desired austenitizing temperature, it goes a lot slower to get those last few hundred degrees. And that's, again, extra time at high temperatures that you don't necessarily want your blade just sitting there cooking at, because realistically the knife, especially carbon steel knife, only needs maybe 15 minutes at austenitizing temperatures before quenching. But yeah, I do think stainless would benefit more from the slow raising of temperature, just because of that thermal conductivity, as well as trying to reduce any kind of thermal shock that the material might go through. By heating up on the outside of the cross, if you think about the cross section of the steel, heating up on the outside much faster than what's happening on the inside, and that potentially could cause some stresses. I guess if you want to play with it, you're welcome to. Let us know what happens.
I think that's what P. Diddy said in court today.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Jeff, what are your thoughts?
It doesn't matter to me. I'm not kidding. I mean, I put it in when it's cold. I put it in when I'm redoing, especially the AEBL. It drops down to way below where it's to make sure it doesn't go back up. And I just go one after the other, and I haven't noticed a difference. So,
yeah, fair enough. Well, I've got a question for Carly.
Yes.
So all these Nordic countries, from the outside. From outsiders like myself, they all seem to be knife obsessed, because I mean, there's you guys making materials. There's Tormek, which is based not too far from you. Sandvik, which I get a lot of my material from.
Yeah.
Why do you think those not? And obviously, they have a rich history of knife making. But why do you think they've become almost synonymous with knife making?
I think it's really the innovation going on up here. I think people for the last 100 years have been pretty well taken care of. Before that, people were really struggling and they had to be innovative in different ways. But for the last 100 years, these Nordic countries have been doing very well and they've been investing heavily into technology. That's how Domasteel came about. That's why Sandvik and Alema are doing so well. I'm actually in Gävle right now, which is where really close to where Sandvik and Alema are based. And Tormek's the same. It was like a guy on a little wheel that was he pedaled with his foot, I think. And he just kept innovating. And those guys are so cool. They just came out with a little plastic foot to keep the water draining off the material correctly. So I think innovation and maybe long winters, lots of time inside to think about problems.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
From what the guys over at Tormek told me is there's a rich tradition in of hobby woodworking.
Oh, and definitely.
A lot of these guys are doing,
whittling.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the original owner of Tormek, his name was Torgny, and so Tormek comes from Torgny and mech for mechanics or whatever. So he smushed it together, and it was the whole idea was his father was a woodworker, and it was a two-person job to move this giant spinning wheel, stone wheel, and he was just like, there's got to be an easier way to do this for my dad. So yeah. But he didn't put the spinning wheel in the drill. He used the drill to spin another wheel, and then that's what made it go on the slower side. So yeah, absolutely. What Carly's saying is right. There's this really rich tradition of innovation in regards to what they're trying to do. But it's all very much along the lines of this idea of hobbyists and like this rich tradition of craft. And it's really, really neat.
Yeah, and I think that comes from also just them being so independent for so long. You know, my mother-in-law's mother, she was out in the fields, like, taking the cows in the summer and you know, living in a little hut. And that wasn't that long ago. So these countries, they did a lot with a very little for a long time. And I think that's brought on a lot of innovation.
Craig's living in a hut right now.
not quite. But they're all sort of, they get the accolade of being like the happiest people in the world as well to the Swedes, don't they? Quite often you see these reports as like the happiest place in the world to live would be Sweden. But yeah, I just think those winters must be so hard.
That's what saunas are for.
Maybe, yes. Yeah.
Saunas and like cozy lighting and blankets everywhere. And you got to get into it. Like you got to go skiing. You got to get into cross country. You just got to get outside. And your children, like I have a 4-year-old and there is no bad weather. You know, when she went to preschool, she slept outside for her nap times. They just bundle them up and... Yeah, there's no such thing as bad weather, just bad clothing. That's the famous Swedish saying.
Really? Wow.
Plenty of booze, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, not for the children, but for
thank
the
you.
Adults.
Thanks, Carly, for squinting. Thank you for defending the parenting of the Swedish people. Jeez Louise.
Yeah. I couldn't say the same in France.
No,
it's very different. Very different attitude to booze here with kids.
Actually, you know what? It's funny you say that because my dad was, when I was very young, he spent all this time, my dad was a winemaker and he spent all this time in France. And when I was young, he would say, this is what they do for the kids. They would take a glass of wine and pour a couple drops of the wine in the water, so you would get the kid used to drinking, you know, under having the understanding the flavor of it. My mother was just like, "You're not doing that. We're not friends. What are you doing? You're not doing that." He's like, "He's gonna try. You don't know what it tastes like." "She's like, no, you're not doing that." And that was the end of that. Yeah.
when our twins, after their first year of school, they have like a parents' evening. And back in the UK, I was used to a parents' evening of, you know, 4 p.m. The parents would go in, have a one-to-one with the teacher, and you'd hear about how the kids are getting on, that kind of thing. They're like, no, this is 8 p.m. Bring the kids with you. Everybody's there at the same time. There's a barbecue going. There's a bar there. And there'll be food. So they're giving out food now. It gets to about 10 p.m.
Holy shit.
Teacher still hadn't gone around to speak to anybody. Then, right, so the kids have all had a meal out as well, so the kids are all eating. Then they bring out espressos for the kids. And our kids are 2 years old, and it's 10 p.m. And this is like a parent-teacher evening. It was just
bonkers. Sounds like a bad idea.
That sounds like a terrible idea.
Terrible idea. And the best thing always makes me laugh. So they have, you know what a bouncy castle is, surely.
Yeah, in the States.
Yeah. But they had a bouncy castle there, but it was like a slide and you'd slide down. But this thing was the Titanic.
Oh, jeez.
With the Titanic popping out of the water. The kids were sliding down and it was just, I'm just sitting there thinking, what the hell is going on here? But very different attitudes to alcohol here with youngsters. Yeah.
At Damestill, do you guys do a lot of company bonding stuff? That's one thing that Tormek, they were telling me that in Sweden, a lot of companies do a lot of real bonding.
Yeah, we do a lot of that. I know at Tormek they do this too. It's like you have fika twice a day.
Oh yeah,
and fika. At our company, because there's only 15 of us, we all sit down at the same table. And we all chat, and during fika time, you never talk about work, or that's the idea anyway. You just talk about your life or your electricity bill or whatever, hockey. And you do that twice a day at 9 o'clock and 2 o'clock. And then we all have lunch together as well. And we play a lot of paddle. That's very popular. It's like paddle, like pickleball.
That's like pickleball. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. We do like, yeah, there's a lot of bonding going on, and we just opened up they opened up like a new hotel next door. It's an old mill house that's now a hotel, and they've got a floating sauna there. So we've gone over there a couple times.
Oh, wow.
That's pretty awesome. You're just out in the middle of the woods. Like for me to go to Söderfors to go to Damestill, you're really just out in the middle of nowhere. So when there's a hotel and they've got a sauna, it really is really picturesque. There's a steel plant right beside you, but it's a really beautiful setting otherwise. So.
Could you explain the importance of fika in Sweden and what it is?
Yeah, fika is a real religion. It's coffee and like a treat sometimes, although in the afternoon we usually have coffee and a piece of fruit. But it's about sitting with people and just taking a pause. They actually call it that, fika pause. And I think it's like a really beautiful tradition. I like that it's mandatory. I like that it gets everyone together. And they introduced it into the industry to stop people from having injuries.
Right.
So they put it in at these two times of the day when they were seeing the most industries happen, or the most injuries happen. All the guys who work at Domusteel, they're part of the metal union. It's unions are very big in Sweden, so they have an actual like union enforced fika, and we join them for that. So
that's what the Tormek guys were. One of the head guys has got an alarm on his clock on his watch just for fika, and he was talking about, he was trying to explain what fika is. But that was what he was saying. He's like, yeah, they did all this research, and it turns out that there were these accidents at this specific time, so everyone stopped at this specific time to have this, like, it's your coffee and this like traditional that Swedish cinnamon bun.
Yeah,
it looks like a ropey knot or something like that.
Yeah, and then
it's like they take it real seriously, and to the point where if you walk around Stockholm, they have all this outdoor dining just strictly for fika. It's like imagine like. If the concept of the coffee break was part of the national society, you know, it's like it's mad.
At a regimented time.
Twice a day. And you're not allowed to talk about work. So if it's a stressful day, you go for fika, you cannot talk about work. And it's just like this wild bonding thing that Sweden is known for.
How do you feel?
I
was just going to ask, does it show – like it affects morale and productivity as well? I mean, it seems like it would be positive thing overall.
I think so. I think we all get a lot from spending that quality time together, especially in your roles. You can get so kind of caught up, and it also forces people into the office. You know, we can work from home sometimes, but it's nice to go in because you know you're going to get these breaks with people and actually converse and connect. Three times a week, we also have this stretching thing we do. So right after fika, we all take a stick and we go and we stretch together in the forge. And some of the guys have said that's really improved their flexibility over the last year and a half or so since we started doing it. And then once a week, we do an exercise together. So either we take a really fast walk for an hour or we do kind of a CrossFit class together.
Wow, that's amazing.
So
that's amazing.
Americans listening to this, you already take fika. You're all sitting in the bathroom scrolling on Instagram. That's your fika. You're not allowed to do the Swedish fika now. You've already your allotted fika time is already over.
Yeah. It's up.
Wow.
You guys, too many Americans are scrolling on Instagram on the toilet. So your fika is over. You've outgrown your fika.
We've mentioned Tormek a number of times, but we haven't really said what they are. Jeff, tell people what Tormek is all about.
It's an amazing water-cooled sharpening system. And if you go to Tormek.com, you can see what it is, or you follow them on Instagram, Tormek_sharpening on Instagram. And it's a small, they have different types of wheels, and it's water-cooled, and you're not going to worry about sharpening too much and taking the temper away, and you're not going to take off too much material. They have jigs. They don't have jigs. If you're sharpening chisels, if you're sharpening axes, they have all these attachments to help you kind of get your sharp. Their axe sharpening system is really, really cool, and any axe will be sharpened, and same thing with all the – they have scissors attachments and all these great things, but it's a great company, and they're really, really good people, and it's made me a better knife maker. So go to Tormek_sharpening on Instagram or Tormek.com.
Yeah, there we go. Right, let's have a look on this list. Where are we?
We also have Paul listener James feedback if you want. But...
Let's break it up. Let's do a bit of that.
All right, guys. If you want to send us a question or listener feedback, you go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, and then you can send us a thing. I got something interesting. It's topical. You know what? We'll save it for next week. It's about, I guess we could do it. It's kind of knife news. Ronald Handmade down in Australia said he sent me the statement from the Sydney Knife Show. And we're incredibly disappointed to announce the 2025 Sydney Knife Show has been canceled. This is from the people at the Knife Show. The KAA representatives met with NSW Police and Rose Hill Garden Management. That meeting, a range of mandatory risks and security measures were presented, including user pay police, lock display cases, bag checks, stab-resistant security vests, and a new exhibitor compliance rules. These conditions were seriously and would dramatically increase the cost and complexity of the event. The police also advised they had to submit their concerns and risk assessment to the Minister of Police and Counterterrorism. So basically, it's this long story about how this knife show, the Sydney Knife Show, was basically canceled because of police fears of what could possibly happen.
Hmm. That's worrying, isn't it, for other shows? Yeah.
Yeah, so Ronald says, it's a pity, particularly the difficult part to swallow, is that none of the restrictions they wanted to enforce are based on current legislation. It's just the cops involved that planning decided to flex their authority.
Oh, wow.
So the version of the show being proposed does not align with the values or experiences we wish to offer to our community. We know this news will be disappointing to many. Please know this decision was not made lightly. We're exploring alternative opportunities to bring the show back to Sydney in 2026. Thanks for your continued support, the Knife Art Association Committee. Yes, there. I guess it was the decisions that were made were based off of the concerns from the police and everything like that. But you know.
I can only imagine we'll see more and more of that kind of stuff.
Well,
but
you know, I don't know what to say about that, frankly, but it was it's timing. It's timely. So I figured I'd bring it up.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense. Have we got any happier?
Yeah, I got happier. Sorry about that, dogs. Sorry, Carly. This one comes from real happy from Dan Venables. Hey, Jeff, Craig and Mareko. I don't know if you guys are doing feedback, but here it goes. I wanted to give you three a massive, massive thank you. I've been a listener since day one and knife making for 10 years, and you lot have been keeping me company in the shop the whole time. Last year, I had some big life changes. I hit super rock bottom. Sorry, Craig. It's going to come back. Nearly didn't come back. Don't worry. Hold on, Craig. But one of the things that got me through and back down to the studio was listening to you guys. Maybe it's part of the madness, but I started back at episode one, and I've been working through the catalog. I'm at your 2023 episodes at the moment, and finally was prompted to write a message as you start to talk about mental health more. So thank you, and keep being awesome, Dan Venables. So at this rate, Dan will be with us for this episode in a couple of years. So
in a couple of years, yeah. We're actually coming up to our 400th episode as well.
When's the 400th episode?
I think we're about a month and a half away, but yeah, about 6 weeks.
Are we going to do anything or no? We're not doing anything.
Nah.
That, you know what? I appreciate that. I appreciate I appreciate that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And to be honest, I mean, we mention this on the show a lot as well. This show, I think, it does us good as well because we stop and we just have a chat and it's always the same. It's like a couple of hours before the show, because for me, it's the evening. I record, this is what, it's 10 p.m. in the evening now. And generally, you know, put the kids to bed and it's just like, the last thing I want to do now is go back out to the studio and do stuff. But every time I do, I'm glad that I did. You know, I always come away from the show feeling a lot, lot better. I appreciate you guys.
It's like Audio Fika.
Audio Fika. There we go.
Audio Fika.
I like that.
Go ahead.
I have a positive news. This is a little bit of a deep dive, but I wanted to give a shout out to Baltic Blades, who I met on the weekend for the first time. And it was actually his birthday 2 weeks ago. So I know you got his birthday wrong like a month or two ago because it was Baltic Knives' birthday, not Baltic Blades. But this time it's officially Baltic Blades' birthday. And yeah, happy birthday.
Nice job.
Happy birthday.
Nice job, Carly. I'm going to bring it back down again. No, I'm just kidding. our friend Nara McDonald said, this is a good one. Nara McDonald says, hey, guys, listening to the latest episode and the conversation on gatekeeping. I think a good example I ran into is when I was asked about a forging press and some old timer chimed in with, "You're not a blacksmith or a bladesmith if you unless you build your own press."
Oh, Jesus.
Jesus.
So he said, he said some horrible things to this guy and then ended it with respectfully. He said respectfully afterwards. I think he
nice job, Naren.
Yeah, I don't think he did, but I think that he said it, thought it. Keep up the good work and keep discussing topics and questions that may or not have easy answers. Speak about the gatekeeping thing, I would think it's interesting because I mean we've said for a long time, Carly, that Damasteel and pattern welded stainless is going to be the future of knife making. I mean, you even see it in more commercial knives have that look.
Yeah,
I mean,
definitely.
I would imagine that there are worries that the process that you guys do is going to be a little bit more widely available, and then there is going to be more competition. Do you worry about that?
I don't know if we worry about it in the same way. I don't know if that makes sense, but our steel is so clean that we do still feel like we're playing our own game in some ways. So as long as we can keep doing that and we can keep getting the powder how we do, then I think we're just really happy to see more of that happening. Like the more people who are using stainless, the better. The more education about stainless, the better. I always mention it, but it was not that long ago that Julia Child said, real chefs don't have stainless in the kitchen. And stainless has come so far since then. So, the more stainless, the better, for sure. Yeah.
Mm. And I'd say even since me doing the show, which is what, we're coming up to, 7 years now, maybe. I think, Jeff, you were doing mainly carbon steel knives at that point, I think. That's certainly how I started out. And I know, with Jeff now, you're what, 90% stainless now?
I hopped on stainless pretty quick. So when we were starting this, I was involved with stainless.
Right,
but, stainless is like... I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that it's interesting that you bring up that Julia Child's quote, because I think it also depends on people's demographic. And my demographic is, a lot of people who are may not be as willing to deal with the maintenance. So I think that being able to have a stainless Damascus is, fits all the, scratches all the itches that people want. You know, something that's as beautiful as Damascus, but you don't have to worry about the maintenance. Well, go ahead.
Can I share from a forger's perspective?
Yeah.
About making stainless? It is a huge pain in the ass. Everybody I know who's made stainless Damascus did not get to consistently making stainless Damascus without first destroying thousands of dollars and months and months of time to get to where they are. I do think that more people will be making their own stainless, but it's still such a huge pain in the ass and not really cost effective. And I think that's what's great about the material that Damasteel offers, is that it is really high quality, super clean, flaw-free, reliable material that you can, if you want, you can forge it without taking all the time to even just make the pattern in the first place or stock remove and have a great blade right away without potentially like a week, 2 weeks worth of work and cleanup and prep and welding and in a boutique or kind of like a not a boutique, but just like in a house-made approach. It takes a lot of time. Shout out Brian House. I think more people will be doing it, but honestly, like, it's worth it. I think Damasteel is worth the time and stress and pain that you save by not making your own. Now, if you want to make a really kind of like specialized pattern or something like that, that's going to be a mosaic or something like that. Okay, sure. Like at that point, but That's a you thing, and that's going to probably be a month worth of work just to make a one blade from that material.
Yeah, and I think that's why we were getting a lot of questions on the weekend in Austria about forging the material, because especially the kind of German-speaking market, it's very carbon-heavy, and they also have this strong tradition of, like, craftsmanship and woodworking and people making their own knives to go out hunting and or fishing, and so the idea of going into stainless but still keeping that real artisan look to things, forging the domicile makes more sense for them. So
yeah,
I really like that. Yeah.
I had a question for you, Carly.
Yeah.
You guys started the DCI virtual event, I guess on the heels of the pandemic.
Yeah, definitely.
How did that come out, and how do you think, and you kept it? A lot of, you know, people would have, you know, you've been doing it year after year. Can you tell us how that started, and then how people are accepting it?
Yeah, I think there's, so it was during COVID, we had an in-person event in Chicago the very first time. And then shortly after, because of COVID, we had to go online. That year we held two online events. And since then we've been doing one a year. There's about 15 to 20 makers who do the show each year. So that's a big commitment from a lot of makers all around the world. And for me, my favorite part is it's cheap for the makers. You know, 80% of my job is just trying to support makers in doing what they do and putting their work out there and showcasing the incredible things that can be done with domicile. And so I really try to think about, you know, what's easy for the makers. And the easiest thing is for them not to have to travel, not to have to invest in that, not to have to worry about leaving their family, getting to just take a couple hours out of their day on a Saturday in November and showcase their stuff. That's why I like it being online. I would love to hang out with everyone. And I think everybody feels the same. That feeling you get when you're around people with a similar passion is awesome. And especially if people can sell their knives in person, you get so much more out of it, but it is an alternative to the in-person shows. And so I think for that reason, it'll stay online for a while. Adding another in-person show, we've talked about a lot, and there was some ideas thrown around on the weekend because there were more DCI makers together in one place than we've ever had.
Right.
Which was really awesome. it'll stay online for now, which I think is great. I think it's awesome. Yeah.
Hmm. It's always fun to do. And one of the most fun things is trying to work out people's accents and how drunk they are a lot of the time too.
Excuse me. Did you ever get any feedback on Craig having a good laugh with the pair? Does he ever say
anything? About like Brittany? You know.
You got to tell the story now. You can't So every let me set it up. So every year, you know, this is the best part about Craig. Everybody seems to think he's like the BBC or something like that. And when I say BBC, I mean British Broadcasting Company. Let's not stop. And they think that he's very proper and he's very like he's got this incredible voice for radio and all that. And they think that, you know, we're fooling around. So they have him come up in the beginning of the Domicile event to do like the introduction and kind of interview pair. But they don't realize that he's just as much garbage as everybody else. So every year he thinks to himself, how can I say something to make pair squirm? And then a couple of years ago, I don't know how you did it, but there was this crazy story of Britney Spears doing this dance with these knives, and you somehow superimposed Pear's face onto the dancing Britney Spears with knives. And the best part was, as I talked to Carly afterwards, Carly said that he just got back from China and he was exhausted. He didn't know what the hell was going on.
So he had no context.
Zero context. All of a sudden, he was like in some sort of fever dream.
He was like, who is this woman?
Wait there, Jeff. Jeff, you can do an you can do the accent, can't you? You can do a great pair impression.
I did a very simple impression of a pair talking to Craig. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Craig.
I think it was better when I heard it first time, Jeff. But that was good.
This quiet, this nice pause in the Craig. I guess maybe. You were laughing. I think I didn't do a good job.
I sit across from Pear at work, and so every once in a while I get a Carly.
Oh, so I was pretty close. Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect. Mareko, tell everybody about your grinder.
I got a Broadbeck.
Nope.
I love it. It's a great machine. I'm thankful to have worked with them to develop the Deep Platin, which allows a lot of flexibility when it comes to grinding blades, but especially sculpting handles. But they're a really great company to work with. They're makers who are making grinders for other makers. Their grinder is basically like the Swiss Army knife of the shop. It can be 6, 7, or 8. I don't know how many attachment arms they have these days. They keep adding new things to their library of attachment arms. They have a lot of versatility. And if you're in a tight work situation, just not a lot of space to work with, it's a great option for you. So if you go to broadbeckironworks.com, you make sure you put Knife Talk 10 at checkout. You will save 10% on any of the packages as well as any of the tool arms and accessories that you need from them. So again, go to broadbeckironworks.com and make sure you put in Knife Talk 10 to save 10%.
Now, I might have to go because my snake guy is here.
Is he there to tame your snake?
You got your own snake guy, eh?
He's here to get the snake.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Well, should we call it a day anyway?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Carly, thank you so much for taking the time out to come and have a chat with us. We've all learned a little bit more about Dharma Steel. And it sounds sounds like a great place to be. Breaks at 2, breaks at 11.
I want to come forward to the show.
Yeah, that would be awesome. In the woods. Yeah, you guys all have to come sometime. That'd be great. The power hammers are lovely. Bichet.
Nice. Very nice. Well, look, thank you again. And everybody, we shall speak to you again next week. We put a new episode live every Monday morning. Until then, bye for now.
Do you want to help kids with their feelings but aren't sure how? You're not alone. Research shows many adults struggle to support kids' mental health. But help is here. Backed by experts at the Nationwide Children's Hospital, the Kids Mental Health Foundation offers free resources to help you create a supportive environment for the kids in your life. Visit kidsmentalhealthfoundation.org for more, because kids' mental health starts with us.
If you're looking for legit ways to make extra money, you've got to check out The Side Hustle Show. With hundreds of actionable episodes to choose from, you'll learn what's working now from real people making real money. Like the Utah mom who built a six-figure business playing video games, or the guy earning $3,000 a month renting out mobility scooters. Online or offline, from Amazon to your own hometown, from YouTube to vending machines, The Side Hustle Show has you and your wallet covered. Subscribe to The Side Hustle Show wherever you're listening to this podcast and increase your earning power today.